but that's the old.
Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. Whenever you're listening to the show, whether you're listening live Saturday on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or if you are listening to the podcast version of this show, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you want to choose to listen, you can do that pretty much anytime. You know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. I don't know if you pick them up at Frank's Discount Podcasts on the corner of 9th and Cervantes. I'm kidding. That's not a place that exists. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of you are out on the streets of Pensacola right now or wherever you're listening to us and doing your Christmas shopping. So I thought, you know, I'd throw one more thing for you to think about in there. It is Christmas. Let me first of all welcome my co-host, Jeremy. Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Always enjoy spreading a little bit of Christmas cheer, and I know that Pensacon was out in full effect for the Pensacola Christmas parade that happened last weekend.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, we were saying Merry Christmas. Of course, I want to also say, you know, Happy Hanukkah, you know, Happy Kwanzaa, Ramadan, Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate, or even if you don't celebrate anything. Hope you're enjoying the season, no matter what your proclivities are. I don't know if proclivities is the right word there, but That sounds a little different. That's a different kind of Christmas. We're not going to be talking about that kind of Christmas today. I have a bad joke in my head that I'm going to move on from right now.
I know that, you know, music is a huge part of Christmas festivities. There's a lot of standards that everybody enjoys every year. I got to ask you though,
and there's a lot of
Christmas parade. Did you get Whamageddon?
There's a lot of standards that people don't like every year.
And that's, yes, I did.
I have now been Whamageddon twice, unfortunately. Those who know me know that I have a lot of respect for George Michael as an artist. I think he was an incredible songwriter, an incredible performer, you know, deserves all the accolades that he has gotten in his life. And after, you know, after he left us, you know, he continues to rack up accolades. And one thing I do appreciate is that Last Christmas came out in 1984, came out the same year as Do They Know It's Christmas, the Band-Aid song that which George Michael was also on, by the way, along with, you know, pretty much every big British pop star of that time. That was a big effort to raise money for starving people in Africa. You know, Bob Geldof had seen the story goes Bob Geldof had seen a special on TV about the famine in Ethiopia and was just horrified and wanted to do something. And, you know, we can maybe there are things we can criticize about it. You know, the lyrics maybe are a little hokey, you know, things like that. But the effort and the sentiment was real, and it's an effort and sentiment that continues to be real. You know, Bob Geldof continues to run the Band-Aid Trust, which continues to filter millions of dollars to starving people every year. You know, all the royalties for that song, which still gets played every year at Christmas time, continue to get donated. There are other things the Band-Aid Trust has done over the years. Of course, they did Live Aid the next year. And, you know, there have been various things that have made money from that over the years. So in the UK, having the Christmas number one is a big deal. And so there's a lot of times that artists will do Christmas songs or something that they want to put out at the holiday season to try to go for that Christmas number. And that year, before Geldof came up with Do They Know It's Christmas, George Michael wrote and Wham recorded Last Christmas with the intention of trying to get the Christmas number one. And so those two songs were out at the same time and competing in the chart. As you may or may not know, Do They Know It's Christmas was the number one for Christmas that year in the UK. I never hit number one in the US, by the way. It charted in like the mid teens, even though it was everywhere because the way the Billboard charts were done at that time, which is something we're going to get into a little bit more too, because this is a subject that, but Last Christmas also did very well, both in the US and the UK. and it was the number two that year. But George Michael, you know, and this is something, again, that I have a ton of respect for him for, saw that happening as like, well, wait a minute. I'm not putting a song out to make money against that. So all the money for Last Christmas also goes to the Band-Aid Trust.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so people may not realize that, but yeah, George Michael took that step of saying, all right, I'm going to give that money to the Band-Aid Trust because I, you know, it's the right thing to do, basically. So over the, I'm going to make my brain hurt by saying how many years it is since then, over the 40 years since then, 41 years since then now this year, I would say that the longer term moneymaker has become Last Christmas. It has become a holiday favorite that gets played into the ground every year to the extent that there is a game now called Whamageddon where you try to avoid hearing the song for as long as you can. And that's a game because it's impossible to avoid the song. You know, even if you don't listen to radio and listen to Christmas music, you're going to run into it somewhere. I even had been taking this step of putting in earbuds before going into the grocery store. but they got me at the Christmas parade, and then they got me again. The Salvation Army bell ringer that was out in front of Publix yesterday was playing it. So
shout out to the bell ringers for the Salvation Army. I know that it's not a high reward for people that go out there and volunteer and do it, but if there's not a better time of year to embrace the spirit of giving, and I know that's a little saccharine, especially coming from me.
Yeah.
But on the heels of everything you're talking about with Band-Aid and the contributions that George Michael made, I do just shout out to Salvation Army. I think they do great work.
Despite all of, so all of that aside, everything that I've just said aside, and again, my utmost respect and admiration for George Michael overall as an artist, I can't freaking stand that song.
I think just, it's beautiful. I don't understand.
It's such an earworm, dude. Yeah, like if anybody even mentions it, it's just stuck in your head for a week and a half, much less if you have to hear it. And it's just so treacly and trait, and it just irks me, and it drives me nuts that it's become one of these like untouchable things that you're going to hear every year and that you can't get away from. I think I would much rather hear Do They Know It's Christmas?
Another good song.
Yeah, and yeah, again, George is on that song too. This is not an anti-George Michael crusade. I know people, you know, kind of
seems like it.
I know people have accused me of that in the past, but no, I mean, like, the guy wrote Careless Whisper.
Fantastic song.
You know, that alone is immortality. You know, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Everything She Wants. Faith. You know, Father Figure, Freedom, but Freedom and Freedom 90 for that matter, because there was the Wham song Freedom first. You know, The Edge of Heaven, you know, dude, like I'm scraping the surface here. The guy's career is insane. You know, I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant songwriter. And by all accounts, not just in the case of this situation with giving the money to Band-Aid, a very, very generous person. You know, he wanted to make sure his former bandmate in Wham, Andrew Ridgeley, was taken care of, and he's made sure to take care of his family, and he left a lot of money to a lot of charities. You know, by all accounts, a really good dude. So I feel a little guilty that I rant about this song every year, but dude, it hurts my heart to have to hear that song every year. It really does. Like more than everybody's got one. I know some people hate the Mariah song. You know, All I Want for Christmas Is You. I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. But I don't mind it. It's fine. I know people that rant and rave about Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time, which I kind of dig. I'll be honest with you.
That one's not for me as much.
I mean, I grew up with it, so that's part of it. But you know, that was one that came around every year for me that I was like, okay, yeah, you know, you hear that. People like to make fun of the synths on it. Well, you know, that's very early synthesizer work there, you know? So, but yeah, Last Christmas. And I have some more I want to say about Christmas music. The whole show is going to be Christmas today, guys. So we'll be back with more in just a moment. You'll listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
tell me if you're really there. Don't make me fall in love again if he won't be here next year. Santa, tell me if he really cares. 'Cause I can't give it all away if he won't be here next year.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch is my co-host. And Jeremy, I got to ask you, I think I've been pretty good this year overall. I think I've been a good friend and a good co-host. Why would you put coal like that in my stocking?
Man, Ariana Grande's vocal runs are incredible, and I... unlike you, have a Christmas spirit.
Oh,
right?
You don't even like
George Michael.
I have plenty of Christmas spirit, and I have an appreciation for Ariana Grande. I think she's a very talented woman.
You don't like that song?
Dude, that's just not good.
I think it is so catchy. It feels to me like it should be bigger than it is, but hey.
But it is huge, and that's kind of why... Jeremy asked me to play this coming in here. We're focusing on Christmas music because it's Christmas, just a couple of days away from the big day. Santa Claus is loading up the sleigh as we speak. But
for some of us.
I mean, all right. So the reason we're talking about this is we were talking a little bit about before the break. I'm coming back to that point, Jeremy, but we're talking about the fact that, since they changed the Billboard rules back in 2015 and they allow these Christmas songs to rechart every year, we now have, as of this year, with it reaching number one yet again on the Billboard Hot 100, All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey is now the all-time record holder for the most weeks at number one on the Billboard chart. And I don't have a problem with the song. I don't have a problem with, the popularity of it or anything. But I think that when they revised the recurrent rules earlier this year to pull stuff off the charts that's just been sitting there forever and keep the charts more current, they also should have done away with the Christmas stuff, because for decades that wasn't the rule, and you'd still hear the stuff every year, and you'd have these songs that would be traditional and popular, and it would be some of the same stuff that's now recharting every year. Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, it's the current number two song in the country, and it's a great song, and I have no qualms with it, and I want to hear it every year at Christmas time. I just don't think it needs to be on the chart. I think that you're taken away from what's current in music by doing that. Because that stuff also affects the year-end charts, too. These songs are charting on the year-end chart every year again now, too. And it's not a true reflection of what's current and popular in that year. And it's cutting away exposure for other stuff that maybe some new artists could break through or things like that. And that Ariana Grande song is a newer example. That song's only... about 10 years old, I think, 10, 11 years old, somewhere in there. It's the current number five song in the country. It's great that, something that's relatively newer can break through. But I mean, literally we're looking at, if we look at the Billboard chart today, which I'm looking at right now, the top 10, there are only two songs in the current top 10 that are songs that were released this year. And that's with them having changed the rules to supposedly fix that. So the number one song in the country right now, were it not Christmas time, would be Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters.
Right.
Number two song in this country would be The Fate of Ophelia by Taylor Swift. They are currently at number 6 and 7 and are the only songs in the top 10 that are not Christmas songs, that were songs that were released this year. When you look at the overall top 40, 30 of the top 40 songs in the country right now are Christmas songs and not new songs.
So a couple weeks ago, you and I were having a conversation, and you brought up a good point, and it's similar to conversations that are had in our space about Rotten Tomatoes, and that is that these charts are more just a reflection of they're quantifying data, right?
Sure, sure.
So when a song that's artificial intelligence comes out, and I may have a moral quandary or issue with it, it's fair, but it really is just a reflection of
of what people are consuming.
If we're going to revise one rule, then we got to kind of start looking at other rules to revise. Because on one hand, to your point, I agree with you. I think that it seems like Christmas should have a whole category separate from itself.
And it used
to. But if you were to ask me what's the most enduring song forever now, it would be "All I Want for Christmas Is You" by Mariah Carey.
So I think you kind of can't have it both ways. I think there are times that it makes sense to make an exception when a song becomes newly popular that had gone away for a while. And more often than not, when that happens, it's because of some kind of media usage. The obviously greatest, most recent example I can give you of that is Kate Bush's "Running Up That Hill," and charting way back up and way higher than it did on its initial run, too, I might mention.
Uh-huh.
But charting way back up because of its use in Stranger Things. A song like "Bohemian Rhapsody" that has charted 3 different times because of different media uses over the years. You know, I think that reflects, hey, this has come back into the current zeitgeist, and it's, and not just for a month because the holiday is here, but for a, you know, for a time period, you know, to where, to the extent that you can just as much associate Bohemian Rhapsody with, what year did Wayne's World come out? 1992, I think.
Yeah.
So you can just as much associate that with 1992 as you can the original release in the late 70s. You can just as much associate "Running Up That Hill" with 2023 as you can 1985, or what in approximate years here, but I'm usually pretty good about getting pretty close to the right year. You know, it's a little different than, okay, we're going to start playing this song for a month, and then we're not going to, and you know, in 2 weeks, you're not going to hear Mariah again. She's going to go back into the deep freeze for another year. And it's just a different thing. If you're going to have this rule that all the Christmas stuff recharts, then there's no reason to kick like "Lose Control" by Teddy Swims off the charts, which they did earlier this year, just because it's been in the charts for 2 years, because people have still been listening to it for 2 years. If it's going to reflect, if it's going to reflect what people are listening to now, then it should reflect that across the board, no matter how old the song is. If it's going to reflect what current stuff people are listening to now, then it should do that. And if something comes back into the zeitgeist for more than just a, you know, holiday period, then it should rechart. That's just my way of thinking. Maybe you think I'm grinchy. Maybe you like seeing the, you know, 30 of the top 40 songs in the country being Christmas songs this time of year. And you know, but nobody's saying don't play them.
Right.
I'm absolutely saying playing them. I would be disappointed if I didn't hear a lot of these songs every year at Christmas. I would be disappointed if I didn't, you know, go out shopping and hear them in the malls or the grocery stores or wherever, or right here at the News Radio family, Pensacola's playlist goes over to Christmas music every year, and it's great. You know, we want to hear this stuff every year. I just don't necessarily think that it belongs on the chart, and then taking away impact from, you know, what the charts were meant to be, which was a reflection of what's currently popular.
Yeah, no, I think you laid out a really compelling case. I totally agree with you, in fact.
Yeah, so I mean, again, you know, taking out, like looking at, you know, if you take out those 30 songs that are in the top 40, and really even if you get down into, because they allow it to the top 50, so that's another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The entire 40 through 50 is all Christmas songs. So that means you've got 10 songs in the top 40 that would be your current top 10. So your current, what would be your number 11 song in the country right now is a song called It Depends by Chris Brown featuring Bryson Tiller.
It's love that guy.
Sitting at number 51. So instead of having a top 20 song, you have a top 50 song. We can go down the list a little bit. 11, 12, 13, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 24, 25. And I'm kind of getting to a point on this. I'm sorry, I'm counting on the ear here, but like Tame Impala, which is a great band. Uh-huh. And not really necessarily a mainstream band, would currently have a top 40 single if it were not pushed out by the Christmas stuff.
How many of the, and I know this is probably not something you have readily available, but just anecdotally and just something to consider, is how many of these Christmas songs that actually are charting are songs that have come out in the last, within 10 years, you know?
I don't think any of them. I might be wrong. I'd have to, you know, do a scan, but like even the Ariana Grande song is 11 years old. The Kelly Clarkson song, that is the other like more modern one that's in here, is I think 12 years old.
And that's an interesting thing it ties into the conversation that we often have about monoculture and how everything kind of used to be channeled or funneled through this one big mechanism. And now it's all so far apart that we will always cling to these older things that everybody knows because we shared them together.
Well,
now we listen to them in department stores and it connects us, you know?
And that's a good point. I mean, the Christmas stuff may be the last example of the monoculture.
Yeah.
It may be, you know, the one thing, but you're getting, I mean, literally Andy Williams has a song in the top 10 right now. I mean, Andy Williams does not reflect current trends in music at all.
No.
Has not been alive for so long. Same, you know, Nat King Cole's in the top 10 right now. Same thing, you know. And it's not that these songs have been revived other than they're revived because they're revived every year. And I'm all for holiday traditions, and music is a big part of holiday traditions. But I don't think traditions are the same thing as current popularity. Like by definition.
Yeah, I think that's valid.
By definition, I don't think they're the same thing. In fact, by definition, I think they're the opposite of each other.
For sure.
Just something to think about. We're going to move on to other Christmas topics after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Out on the third planet closest to the sun, there's a special celebration and it sounds quite fun. A jolly old fellow brings toys to everyone on a holiday they call Christmas. Now I'm not going to lie, it makes no sense to me. But here's what Earthlings told me about this Christmas mystery. Santa is a furry freak with epic superpowers. He flies to every human home in under 14 hours. He's a master burglar, a pro at picking locks. If you don't leave milk and cookies out, put dung in your socks. If you act nicely through the night and don't jump on your bed, Santa comes with sugar plums and hurls them at your head. But if you're on his naughty list, he shoots missiles at your toes. He might just roast your chestnuts with his powerful flamethrower.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, my co-host. And Jeremy, I wanted to prove that I'm not a Grinch, that I don't have a problem with Christmas music or current Christmas music even more so. Like if that song, I don't know if that song hit the top 40 when it was released 3 years ago, but it should have. And if we're going to have songs that are going to recur on the Hot 100 every year, why not that one? That's.
I know you have a Christmas playlist. I have a Christmas playlist, and I know that that's one of the most recent additions to mine.
Yeah, that's I don't know what Christmas is, but Christmas time is here. It's by the old 97s. It was from the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special that was released just a couple of years ago. And I love that song, but also it gives us a good chance to kind of continue a little bit of the discussion that we were having, but also move into a different area of Christmas entertainment, which is movies and specials and kind of the things we watch every year, that sort of thing. But, you know, we were talking, Jeremy, before the break about the monoculture and the way that the monoculture has kind of gone away. And one of the things that has been part of the monoculture for so many years is things like the Christmas specials that you see every year and the Christmas movies that you see every year. And I think it still exists, but I think there's some concern that it's going away. I know there was a lot of people unhappy that the Charlie Brown Christmas special is no longer available on broadcast television. Because a couple of years ago, Apple bought up all the rights to all of the Peanuts holidays, not just the holiday stuff, but the Peanuts animated stuff in general. And they do every year offer a free streaming period for that special. So even if you don't have Apple TV Plus, you could, I believe the period's already passed for this year, but you get that week where you can go watch it for free, even if you don't have the service. Other than that, it's on their subscription service. They do the same thing with It's the Great Pumpkin at Halloween, et cetera. But that's really
Can we rattle off a couple of those real quick? I know you've got a couple and I have a couple.
I mean, I think in terms of TV specials that everybody thinks of, they're thinking of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. They're thinking of Frosty the Snowman. They're thinking of
one of both of our favorites, I think, is a Christmas Story.
Yeah, I mean, that's a movie, but yeah. And again, they still run that for 24 hours every year on TBS. You know, so that's it, all of that stuff. The only one that's really not available that people raise a fuss about is the Charlie Brown Christmas. And it's not even that it's not available. It's that it's not on your TV unless you have the Apple TV app hooked up to your TV.
Sure.
Which you can do. Not hard. I have it set up in my house. You know, if you have a lot of the TVs are internet enabled now, or if you have, you know, an older TV that you hook up your, you know, Xbox, your PlayStation, whatever to it, you can download those apps onto those platforms and then run it, or you get a Fire Stick, or, you know, there's ways to do it. It's not hard unless you're still watching on an old, you know, rabbit ears, black and white. There's, you know, which most people aren't, it's there. So I don't know if I have that concern, Jeremy, that's gone away. But where I think that it maybe has morphed a little bit is maybe we're not all sitting and watching it at the exact same time.
Or is there a space available for new ones? Because several of the ones that we just listed are, I mean, decades and decades old. Will we ever kind of have that experience that we're all sharing? Again, that, you know, future generations are going to embrace, but there has kind of been an evolution about what kind of rises to the top around the holiday season.
Yeah, I mean, now instead of this is on at 8 o'clock on Saturday on CBS, it's, you know, hey, there's this new Christmas special on Netflix and everybody's watching it. Have you watched it yet? And it's that kind of thing where you don't have to have an appointment time for it, but everybody, you know, it still circulates and people watch it, and they do still create new broadcast TV specials too. I know I just was at the gym the other night and there was a Motown Christmas special that was brand new for this year that was on TV, you know,
so
things like that still exist, but they exist more in the streaming space. And even the things that are like movies or, well, that the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special is a perfect example of that. That was done for Disney Plus. It's an hour long special.
Put that out.
Yeah, it's an hour long special, and it was done for Disney Plus. And people that are into that thing watched it, and it got very popular and got a lot of attention. I plan to watch it again this year, and it's becoming, you know, a new holiday tradition. I think that everybody still has those films in their family that are their traditions to watch. And the family all still gathers to watch them, or their specials or whatever you want to call them. They just don't necessarily have to be in front of the tube at, you know, 7 p.m. on Thursday to do it. They can watch it when they want to watch it. Like in my family, we have to watch A Christmas Story every year. We have to watch Elf every year. I personally, every year when I'm wrapping gifts, put on the movie White Christmas. That is my annual gift wrapping film. I watch it every year religiously. The traditions are still there. I think the way that we access those traditions have changed a little bit.
A great movie called A Christmas Story was released maybe 2 years ago, and it is the continuation of A Christmas Story, and I absolutely love it. I don't know that it's going to kind of fill that niche of like something that I'm going to watch year after year.
I think that was just last year.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. So
does it have the same kind of staying power or enduring power for future generations? Can you speculate? What do you think?
Was it A Christmas Story or A Christmas Story Christmas? Was that what it's called?
Oh, I think the second one. I think A Christmas Story Christmas.
Yeah, I'm wrong. It is a couple of years old at this point. But yeah, it is a sequel with a lot of the actors back from the original. Peter Billingsley back playing Ralphie. And, you know, a lot of the cast returned, a lot of the younger cast, obviously. Of course, we lost Darren McGavin several years ago. And so the old man is not in it, which, by the way, just go on record about this again. I know I've said it on air before, and I've said it many times. One of the most underrated film performances of all time
is incredible.
Darren McGavin as the old man in the original Christmas Story. That is he should have been Oscar nominated for that. And no,
so
I'm not, you know, exaggerating or being sarcastic or anything like that. It's just such an understated, brilliant performance. And, you know,
I'll say the same for the mom. And unfortunately, I don't know her name.
Melinda
she
Dillon
was replaced in the most recent movie.
Yeah. Melinda Dillon, who, I do think she just passed recently. She was still alive when the film was made, but she was retired and, did not want to come back for her. So Julie Haggerty played the role.
And did good.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Melinda Dillon, you know, of course, was also in Close Encounters of the Third Kind and, you know, has been in a number of other great things. Yeah, so I'm not so much worried about the traditions and the monoculture on the holiday stuff going away. But I do think you're right that maybe tastes change over the years and maybe the new stuff that's being produced is a little different. I mean, certainly the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special that I've been praising is a little more irreverent. Although very much still in the spirit of the season. And one of the things you mentioned, Jeremy, that I think has really gained popularity over, I'd say, the last 20 years is like these holiday rom-coms that you see. Netflix does a lot of them, but you see they kind of really gained steam on the Hallmark Channel and Lifetime.
Yeah.
And they're more directed at a female audience. And it's, you know, to the extent that you can write a parody of one in your head in 5 minutes, busy, high powered, big city female executive goes back to her rural small town and runs into the local woodsman, and they conflict at first, but then they come together at the end, and she abandons her big city career and moves back to the rural area to be with the local lumberjack, That's just off the top
100%.
Of my head. But, you know.
Brilliant. Green Lake. But what's interesting about that is, paradoxically, they're not family films. I wouldn't think. I feel like they're very tailored towards a female audience. And that's a bad thing inherently. It's just different.
I don't think they're particularly steamy to where you couldn't necessarily watch them with the family. But I do think they tend to have a female appeal, and but they do have an appeal, and they're big enough to the extent that there actually are Christmas conventions now. There was just one last week in Edison, New Jersey. It's a big one they do every year, and brings in all of the stars of all of those movies. So, you know, it's everything has a fandom, everything has a niche, and that's that one. Jeremy has a little game that he's cooked up that we're going to play in the next segment. He's going to test my critical acumen here when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mom's cooking chicken and collard greens, rice and stuffing macaroni and cheese, and Santa put gifts under Christmas trees. Decorate the house with lights at night.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. That is my absolute favorite thing that I have discovered this holiday season. DJ Cummerbund, you can find him on YouTube and all over the socials and all that kind of stuff, did that little mashup of two of my absolute favorite Christmas songs, Christmas Wrapping by The Waitresses and Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. Had no idea those two things would mash up so well, but oh my God, I love that.
It's fantastic. That was the first time hearing it for me, and I loved it.
Oh, so good, so good. So we wanted to move on. Jeremy cooked up a little game for me here where he's gonna throw some... Well, yeah, I'll let you tell me, Jeremy. How's this going to work?
So we don't often play games here on Let's Go Pensacola, but if this is a segment that you enjoy, make sure to let us know. As many of you know, Julio and I often reference Rotten Tomatoes. Understanding it's not the end-all be-all of whether or not a film is good, but it's a good kind of good reference for us when we're kind of talking about the legacy of films. So what I've done is I've gone through and I've listed 20 iconic holiday films that I believe Julio has seen most of them. And I want to kind of go and get Julio to guess within 10% on both sides what the Rotten Tomatoes score for these various Christmas classics are. That means he has a potential for 20 points if he's indeed seen all of these movies. If there's one or two he hasn't, then obviously the potential score goes down a little bit. I feel pretty good about this. I think Julio's going to nail these.
So,
I'm just going to name the movie.
And I think what we're thinking here too. Yeah, I think what we're thinking here too is not just what like the general consensus of these movies are, but like what the critical consensus, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that people love that the critics didn't think very highly of it when it came out.
That's a really good disclaimer. We are going solely on critic response. I didn't even bother to look at the audience reaction, so I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah. Okay, hit me.
All right. Starting with number one, 1988's Die Hard. What is the Rotten Tomatoes score?
83.
Julio, you were so close. It is 94%, so you are just a little under on that one.
So I missed the point on that one because it was within 10%.
So let's go a little more current with 2003's Elf.
Elf, I'm going to say 90.
Oh, you were very, very good. You got that one. The total critic score is an 85%, so you are within 5 points on that one.
Okay.
Next, 2003's Bad Santa.
I seem to remember the critics really liking that one. I'm going to say 90 again.
So close yet so far. That was actually a 78%. So
are you serious?
Than I would have expected as well.
Oh, this injustice must not stand.
Alex, it's a classic. And speaking of classics, this is a beloved one among Julio and I that we always encourage that folks watch. It's 2017's Anna and the Apocalypse. What is its Rotten Tomatoes score?
So I'm going to guess that does not have as many critics reviews as a lot of these other films do, because it is not has not been as widely seen.
Accurate.
And it's going to be kind of niche for a lot of people. So I'm going to say 72.
Oh, you definitely got the point for that one. The score is 77%. Well done.
Okay. Should be higher, but that's another story.
We're also going to mix in a couple of those classic short Christmas specials that we talked about in the beginning, including 1965's A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, I mean, that's got to be a 98.
Oh, Julio, I want to give you that one so bad. It is an 86%. Who are these curmudgeons?
That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
It really is. Next is one I think I'm a little more high on than you, but I don't mean to speak on your behalf. I feel like we've had conversations about 1984's Gremlins. What do you think is the score for Gremlins?
Gremlins, I'm going to go with a solid 78.
Yeah, you get the point for that one. Well done. It is 86%.
86. Okay. Well, more liked than I thought it was. That's good.
A little more niche on this next one, and I'm not sure that you've seen it, but have you seen 1994's The Ref with Dennis Leary?
I have not seen it, but I know it by reputation. Enough that I feel like I could make an educated guess as to how it did with the critics.
What do you think?
I'm going to say 82.
Yeah, you get the point for that one, Julio. It is 73% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, a little lower than I thought, but all right.
Pay attention to the year on this one. We're 1967's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. What do you think?
So this is the Chuck Jones animated special, the classic.
Yes.
Dude, if this is anything less than a 90, somebody needs their critical license revoked. I'm going to say 90.
Oh, good job. It is a 100%, a rare 100% on
Excellent.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Excellent. Okay.
All right, let's switch gears to the 2000 How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
So this is the live action Jim Carrey directed by Ron Howard, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. I know a lot of people love this movie, and it is very well thought of by a lot of audience. It just had a re-release this year. But I don't remember the critics being super hot on it. I'm going to say 72.
Way overestimated that one. I was shocked. It got a 50%.
Ooh, yeah. See, I was kind of inclined to go a little lower than I did. I was hedging a little bit, so...
I thought you might have been. What about 2004's The Polar Express?
So there was I like that movie, but there are people that are creeped out by it, and it was early motion capture, and I know that there were some critics that were not real thrilled with that side of it. So I don't think it's as overwhelmingly positive as you might think. I'm going to say 78.
A very, very high guess. The correct answer is 55%.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
Home Alone, 1990, another beloved film, especially by audiences. What do you think?
So my mind immediately goes to the scene in Dogma where Salma Hayek's muse character, Serendipity, is explaining that she's responsible for 19 of the 20 highest grossing films of all time. And she's questioned about it being only 19. And she says, oh yeah, you know, that one with the kid where he's left at home. And she does the Kevin face and all that. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, somebody sold their soul to Satan to get the grosses up on that piece of crap. So I do not think that was very well critically received. I am going to say that's going to be around 65.
Oh dude, you almost nailed that one. You're good at this. That was a 66%.
Okay. Okay.
Have you seen The Night Before?
I have not seen The Night Before, but again, I know it enough by reputation that I feel inclined to be able to make a guess.
What do you think?
72.
Man, so close again, Julio. You got the point for that one. It's a 69%.
I almost said that, but I just thought 69 and Seth Rogen was too obvious.
Two on the nose? Yeah. how about 1954's White Christmas, a beloved film over at your house?
That is, like I said, one of my personal favorites, but I don't know. So that is technically kind of a loose remake of another film called Holiday Inn, which also starred Bing Crosby and is the film that actually won the Academy Award for White Christmas as Best Original Song, because the song originates from that movie. Being a remake, I don't know that it was quite as liked by the critics as Holiday Inn was. So I still don't think it's terrible. I'm going to say 78.
Oh, you're so close. It was 76%. So you definitely get the point for that one. We got about seven more to go.
Okay.
We're going to move from White Christmas to Black Christmas. What do you think?
So are we talking about the original 1970, what is it, four?
1974. Yep. Okay. Yeah, nailed it.
There's no way critics were hot on this movie, even though it's a classic of the genre. 35.
Wow. 71%.
Really? Oh, that's
71%.
That's heartening. Okay.
Yeah, we all, you know, a little revisionist history. It's one of the first slasher films, so people our age, I think, have kind of reassessed that one.
That could be. You do get that in Rotten Tomatoes sometimes. You get these kind of later critical assessments that, yeah.
I think this is one that you like a lot. It's 1988's Scrooge, starring Bill Murray.
Yeah, again, one that I don't think the critics necessarily loved as much when it was initially released, though. I think it's one that has just kind of gained estimation over time. 65.
Yeah, I'm going to give you that one, obviously, because you are within six. The score is 71%.
Okay.
1983's A Christmas Story.
So now an all-time classic, but was kind of a bomb when it was originally released. Although I do think the critics did like it. It just did not do well with audiences until it got onto TBS every year. I'm probably coming in hot on this, but I'm going to say 80.
Very, very good guess. 87, you get the point for that one.
Okay, cool.
1989, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
That was not very well critically received. I can tell you that for sure, even though, again, people consider it a holiday classic now. 52.
You're off by 20 on that one. It's actually a 72%.
Oh, okay.
Always got to consider, and it's something we talked about briefly, all these new YouTube movie critics that grew up on this stuff are going to always bring them up just a little bit.
That's true. We got time for one more.
All right, we got one more. I'm going to say 1993's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
If that's lower than a 90, I'm very angry. So no, I'm saying 90.
Congratulations. It is 95. I don't think we have time to go through and do the scores right now, but maybe we can follow up with it next time.
Almost said 95. Yeah, we can do that. And until next week, folks, I hope everybody has a great Christmas or whatever you're celebrating this time of year. We love you all. We'll see you back here next week for our last show of the year. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.